welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, April 2nd, 2018 will always be a date remembered around the world, especially in South Africa. It was the day one of South Africa's most unrelenting fighters against the racist system of apartheid, Winnie Madikizela Mandela, passed away. She was 81 years old. As we look back at her legacy, there is no doubt that Winnie Mandela sacrificed a lot, often risking her life in the struggle to liberate South Africans from a system that had brutally oppressed her people for many years. In her fight against the apartheid government, Winnie Mandela endured many years of threats, harassment, and almost 500 days in solitary confinement, not to mention the forceful relocation from her home in Soweto. Winnie Mandela is also known for her tireless campaign to have her husband Nelson Mandela released from prison. But as the world pays homage to Winnie Mandela, and rightly so, there have been others who have insisted that to have a complete picture of Winnie Mandela's legacy would mean to examine the other side of her reputation as a radical and uncompromising leader whose methods of defiance were violent and were responsible for furthering the rifts in her society. However, others argue that such a narrative is one that is pushed by people who refuse not only to acknowledge her important role in the liberation movement, but who are also advancing an apartheid-era narrative. However way you look at it, there is no doubt that Winnie Mandela was a fighter who dedicated her life to the cause of social justice, a cause that was not popular to those who were benefiting and upholding a system of oppression, and whose methods of protecting that system would not stop short of engaging in acts of violence, character assassination, and imprisonment. So today on the show, we will examine the legacy of Winnie Mandela, how history will remember her, how her life and struggles inspire today's generation of social justice activists. We will also listen to your opinions on how Winnie Mandela inspired you. And right after, we have a report from Johannesburg from Upfront's Nadia Sami, giving us a background on the life and legacy of Winnie Mandela.
Winnie Madikizela Mandela was a strong woman. To me, I feel she was a very strong woman who could fight for rights. And one notable thing that I remember her is when she stood beside her husband in fighting for rights for the South Africans. And that is a lesson to African nations, including Malawi. One thing women can learn from Winnie Madikizela Mandela is that women need to be strong enough to fight for women's rights and standing by their husbands or by men to assist them in fighting for rights of people.
Well, this means that indeed African women, they have leadership, because there is this saying that behind every man's success, there is a woman. So we can I can describe Winnie Mandela as a strong woman who fought for apartheid, you remember, in South Africa. So this means that women have the courage, though in African culture we underrate them.
Winnie Madikizela Mandela, she was an inspirational to African women. She taught us that women too can do everything. She was an icon in the fight against apartheid in South Africa, which encouraged us that we also could do the same in terms of fighting for equal rights between men and women, and also to become more civilized in the 21st century.
Oh,
Thank you all for your opinions on the show today. We just listened to the voices of Malawians speaking about the legacy of the late Winnie Mandela. And before we go to our report with Nadia Sammy in Johannesburg, South Africa, let's listen to what the South African President Cyril Ramaphosa had to say about the late Winnie Mandela.
Fellow South Africans, it is with a profound sense of loss and deep sadness that we have learned of the passing away of Mam Winnie Madikizela Mandela. Even at the deepest moments of our struggle for liberation, Mam Winnie was an abiding symbol of the desire of our people to be free. In the midst of repression, she was a voice of defiance and resistance. In the face of exploitation, she was a champion of justice and equality.
That was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking on the death of Winnie Mandela. Nadia, you are currently in Johannesburg, South Africa. What is the mood like in the country? What was the mood like right after it was announced that Winnie Mandela had passed away?
There's a profound sense of sadness in the country as South Africans come to terms with the fact that they've lost a very powerful figure in Winnie Madikizela Mandela. This is a woman who was not only a former wife to Nelson Mandela, but a very strong leader in her own right. She was a trailblazer. Mama Winnie, as she was affectionately called, was one of the country's first qualified black social workers. She worked tirelessly to keep Mandela's name alive while he was in prison. She was harassed by the apartheid police, tortured, beaten up, separated from her children, and gagged. This is a woman who endured immense suffering and pain. She was essentially a fugitive in her own country. For many years, she was banished to a rural town called Brandfort, where she had little contact with other people. Through all that, she remained a uniting figure in the fight for democracy, and she later led the ANC Women's League for several years. Her entire life, beside the time she was banished, she lived in Soweto, Johannesburg, where she was an active member of the community and her church, and remained a revered and much loved figure up until her death. But that's not to say she was without fault or by any means a saint. In the 1980s, she became engulfed in controversy. Central to that was a 14-year-old boy called Stompe Sapai and the Mandela United Football Club. The club was founded supposedly to keep boys off the street, but they hardly ever played football and they were essentially her bodyguards. The young activist Stompe Sapai was kidnapped by Winnie Madikizela Mandela's bodyguards in December 1988 after being accused of being a police informer. The following month, January 1989, Sapai was killed by Jerry Richardson, one of her bodyguards. He admitted to that murder and was convicted and given a life sentence. Richardson claimed he'd acted on the orders of Winnie Madikizela Mandela. She was later convicted of Sapai's kidnapping and being an accessory to the kidnapping. The 6-year jail sentence she received was commuted to a fine and 2-year suspended sentence. What later emerged at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, chaired by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, was that Jerry Richardson, the bodyguard and the murderer, was actually a spy for the apartheid police. Richardson has himself confirmed that. The allegation is that Richardson was placed within Winnie Madikizela Mandela's inner circle by the apartheid police, where he gained a position of trust. This was then used to discredit her, so she would lose the almost cult-like status she'd enjoyed at the time. It's claimed things went horribly wrong when 14-year-old Stompe Sapai found out Richardson was a spy, and Richardson killed him, allegedly to silence him. It's a period of South African history that remains murky, and the story changes according to whom one speaks to. But what is certain is that Madikizela Mandela managed to emerge from that period and still enjoyed mass support among the South African public. There's a lot of sentiment emerging after her death that perhaps her leadership skills were underutilized in the democratic government, that perhaps she should have held a leadership post. For a short time, she was a deputy minister, and she was an ANC in parliament up to the time of her death, but she was hardly ever in the National Assembly due to ill health. President Cyril Ramaphosa has announced that Madikizela Mandela will receive a national official funeral to be held on the 14th of April, while an official memorial service will be held on the 11th of April. There's also an overwhelming feeling among South Africans that they're losing the stalwarts who fought against apartheid. The original freedom fighters are slipping away. Madikizela Mandela's legacy in her later years really centered around the youth. She was a source of inspiration to student leaders during the recent Fees Must Fall protests in South Africa. They visited her at her home in Soweto, where she encouraged them and offered them guidance. After her death, Economic Freedom Fighters leader Julius Malema went to her home and he spoke about her as a mother figure, as the only person who could hold his hand as an opposition leader on the one side and President Cyril Ramaphosa on the other. She's being hailed as someone who had the ability to bring people of different convictions around the same table. Winnie Madikizela Mandela is an immensely interesting woman. Her life is an incredible story. I would recommend to anyone who hasn't read about her life to do so. She's published the books Part of My Soul Went With Him and 491 Days, which both offer great insight through interviews and letters explaining how she became politicized and her life under the apartheid regime.
Thanks, Nadia. That was Nadia Sami reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. For those of you just joining us, welcome and thanks for tuning in to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C. And on the show today, we are talking about the legacy of the late Winnie Mandela, who passed away on April 2nd, 2018. Mrs. Mandela was considered one of the most prominent anti-apartheid leaders whose defiance against the brutal system of repression eventually led to its fall. On the phone from Johannesburg, South Africa, is Sitembile Mbete. Sitembile Mbete is a South African political scientist. She's also a lecturer in the Department of Political Sciences at the University of Pretoria. Sitembile, thanks for joining us. Let me start off by asking you, as a political scientist, how important was Winnie Mandela in the struggle to end apartheid, and how will history remember her?
I think Winnie Madikizela Mandela was so important in South African history for being the face of the liberation struggle after the African National Congress and other liberation movements were banned in 1961, and really keeping the name of Nelson Mandela alive in South Africa by being the leader of the Release Nelson Mandela campaign, and mobilizing both local and international interest in the conditions of black South Africans under apartheid. In many ways, she was the most feared anti-apartheid activist in South Africa for 30 years. The apartheid government kept her under constant surveillance. She was often placed under banning orders, and basically what a banning order was that you basically ceased to exist as a citizen within a country. You couldn't enter public spaces, you couldn't work, you couldn't be alone with people. And then, of course, she was arrested and very brutally tortured. Mm-hmm. And she was one of the first people to be placed under solitary confinement for 18 months. Mm-hmm. And she
endured a lot of abuse from the regime at the time. But let me ask you, you're in South Africa right now. What was the mood like in Joburg when the news broke out?
Oh, the mood was so somber. And let's remember that, you know, she spent most of her life in Soweto, which is a township outside Johannesburg, and was really the mother of the nation. You know, people knew her. She was very accessible to people in her neighborhood and in various areas, and she was always very close, particularly to young people. She always would engage with with young people and around young people's concerns. And honestly, for many people like myself, who was born in the early 1980s, Winnie Mandela was who we knew from the struggle. The people that were locked up on Robben Island, like Nelson Mandela or Walter Sisulu, we hadn't seen their photographs in decades. So Winnie Mandela for us was the face of what the liberation struggle was. So really, after her death was announced, there was just this somberness and this sadness and a real sense of mourning. It feels like, you know, we've lost not just an icon or a symbol, but we've lost a family member, we've lost a mother, we've lost a friend. And also we've lost somebody who I think tried to keep the ANC honest. So she always reminded the ANC of the promises that it made to poor South Africans, right, of the promises that it made of improving people's lives.
She always called on them to live to their core principles. Probably the reason why she was not very popular among the ANC cadres of today, right?
Definitely. I think that she was very unpopular because she wouldn't toe the line. She didn't always behave. And the things that she did were not always neatly packaged. And, of course, she was very open about being critical. She refused to toe the party line.
Right. Let me ask you now. So many people are saying that she never received her due respect from the ANC government in many ways. What is your feeling on that?
I agree. I think that she didn't receive her due. And I think that the ANC government was far more concerned with presenting a unified or good face for international investment and all kinds of things. And so really neglected her because she wasn't very convenient. And so she was never rewarded in the ways that you've seen other people be rewarded. She was fired from the national cabinet about 3 years after joining, and then was never really celebrated as an icon of the struggle while she was alive. And I think that there were many people who tried to distance themselves from who she was and what she stood for.
Now, Sitembile, does it appear to you that from their relationship, even after they separated, I'm talking about Winnie Mandela and Nelson Mandela, that they had, that even after they had some falling out politically, like when he had to fire her from her position at the ministry, that he never really believed all these accusations about her?
You know, she was accused of all sorts of things, including murder in the 1980s and subsequent information that has come out of that. And, you know, our former Chief Justice of our Constitutional Court, who worked on her case, has made this point recently that she was never found guilty of the death of Stompie Sepeng. And there's a lot that the apartheid government tried to pin on her. And so, you know, she was, I think, part of what her sin, so to call it, was that she was just juxtaposed against a saintly Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela came out of prison and he was forgiving and in many ways was turned into into somebody who was beyond human, who was saintly, almost godly. And she then served as a very convenient villain and a foil really to who he was.
Hold it right there, Sitembile. Let's take a quick break and we will be right back with Sitembile Mbete, a South African political scientist on the phone with us from Johannesburg, South Africa. And when we come back, we'll look at the complex relationship that Winnie had with her late husband and ally in the struggle, Nelson Mandela. So don't go away. Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi on the phone with me to talk about the legacy of the late Mama Winnie Mandela, as she was often referred to in South Africa. Sitembile Mbete, a political scientist and lecturer at the University of Pretoria, Stembile. Many say that Mandela always understood that regardless of what was said about Winnie Mandela, that she was always inextricably part of him, his life, and eventually his legacy.
Look, and I can't say, right, and he's now passed away, and but certainly from many accounts, they still had quite a positive relationship until he died. Things were certainly strained around the time of their divorce and with some of these issues as they came up. And I think, you know, we must never forget that she and Winnie Mandela used to describe herself as the most unmarried married woman.
There was still a relationship.
They had got, certainly, but although they had gotten married, they'd lived with the, and they were, and he was out of jail for the first 6 years of their marriage, or he wasn't at Robben Island for the first 6 years of their marriage. He was in and out of jail for it. So they had a very, they never had a normal relationship. They were never able to build the kind of intimacy and normalcy that normal normal married couples can build.
Right. It was never a normal marriage because, you know, after
he was
taken away just a few years after they had gotten married. She stayed with him regardless. But two things that I find highly significant and symbolic was one that when right after he was released after you know his time at Robben Island, I think in February 1990, that right before he gave that speech, the famous speech at City Hall, that story is that he had forgotten his glasses and that he borrowed her glasses to read his first speech to the people. I found that very highly symbolic. The other thing was that she describes the moment when he took his last breath on earth, that she was right there sitting with him in the room and she watched him take his last breath.
I think that he appreciated how much she kept his name alive while he was in prison. And I think that he understood more than most other people how his grand stature was a result of her, was a result of her activism. I think also there was a great connection and a fondness, obviously, between the two of them. And there was a camaraderie, and I think that, and a comradeship. And I think that she really was his equal and in many ways transcended him as an activist, as a militant person. And what happened then is that when he went to Robben Island and was imprisoned, that over 27 years tamed him and it tamed some of his edges, whereas she was outside facing the brunt of a horribly brutal and oppressive regime. And that just radicalized her even further, rightly so and understandably so.
Right.
And so I think that he appreciated those nuances about her and her life far more than other observers have done. And therefore, when you read what he writes about her, he wrote about her far more compassionately, I think, than many people realize.
Now, let me ask you, in terms of the conversations that are going on in South African media, how are they framing her legacy?
Well, the thing is that what you're seeing actually in South African media and other conversation is that it's still very polarized across race. So many, you know, for most black South Africans, she is an icon. She's a symbol. She was a mother. But not only that, she was an activist. People, a lot of stories have been speaking about her being, you know, in protests with people and comforting families that were bereaved, you know, whose children had been killed by the apartheid state, or supporting young activists around the seas. We had protests around the cost of fees in South Africa at South African universities, and many of the younger activists who only met her 3 or 4 years ago speak of her so fondly as somebody that supported them and mentored them. Mm-hmm. And so I think for many black South Africans, this is a tragic loss, and because, you know, for the vast majority of people who came of age after 1964, the symbol of the struggle against apartheid was Winnie Mandela. Then what you've seen is that there's been this polarized discussion with a lot of white people describing her as a villain, describing her as a murderer because of Stormzy Sithole, or as, you know, not deserving to have been married to Nelson Mandela,
right,
and that kind of thing.
And so they're painting as a very flawed character, basically. She was a flawed hero.
And not even a hero, they just paint her as being flawed. And I think that what that raises is that South Africa, despite us being 25 years from, or 24 years from 1994 and from democracy, we still have very different views of history and of what our past is, and those views are racially polarized.
And another dimension to this, what do you think, how much is this negation of her contribution to the end of apartheid have to do with the fact that she was a woman?
Certainly, there is so much about the way in which Winnie Mandela has been criticized that is about South Africa being an incredibly patriarchal society. And there's a great deal of sexism about her being a woman who refused to be identified by her husband. So she used to say very firmly that she never had any intention of being a first lady, or she never had any intention of being defined by Nelson Mandela. And she resisted that at every point. And she was very militant. And I think a lot of the negative criticism of her is because that's not the way women are supposed to behave.
Mm-hmm.
And in a South African society that has such stark gender roles, culturally and also in terms of religion, because South Africans are very religious and very Christian, of different Christian denominations, she defied all expectations of how women are supposed to behave. And I think that a lot of the criticism of her comes from that.
Now, finally, Sitembile, before I let you go, and I really do want to thank you for having taken time to speak to us about the legacy of Winnie Mandela. In the latter part of her activism, I know she maintained a position in the parliament. She held some political positions right after the end of apartheid. But how much connection did she maintain to her base, to her constituency, the rural, urban, poor black South Africans?
Certainly. And I think that, you know, Winnie Mandela grew up in a rural area in the Eastern Cape of South Africa in a village. Her dad was a chief. But, you know, from her early 20s, she lived in Johannesburg, she lived in Soweto, she lived in poor urban township areas, so areas where poor and working class black people lived. And she maintained her link to her community. So she never moved out of the black township of Soweto where she lived. So whereas many people, many of our liberation heroes, then bought into the leafy white suburbs as soon as they could, she never left. She remained a part of her community. She remained an active member of her church in her community. She acted as a social worker. She would take in children who didn't have anywhere to go. She would help bereaved families. She would attend people's funerals, which is a big thing culturally in South Africa. And so she remained she kept her link always to black South Africans, to poor South Africans. And that is one of the reasons why she's going to be so fondly remembered. And I think that beginning she's going to have an official funeral, that we can expect that it's going to be well attended by South Africans from all walks of life, but particularly poor South Africans who really held on to her as their champion.
Sitembile Mbete, thank you very much. Sitembile is a South African political scientist. I spoke to her from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
And as we come to the end of the show today, I'm going to leave you with this classic by the late Hugh Masekela, another South African legend who passed away earlier this year, 2018. Obviously, it's been a very tough year so far on South Africa. Hugh Masekela was also, aside from being one of the greatest musicians from Africa, was also an ally and comrade in the struggle against apartheid, together with the late Winnie Mandela. And this is Coltrane by Hugh Masekela. And with that, we come to the end of our show today on Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganya. You can connect with me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. Follow our Facebook page. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Africa. Helele. But this is over my life. Helele. Oh. Silinu.
Stay tuned for Africa News tonight.